Thank you, everybody, for coming. Click. There it goes. There's a lot to talk about with remote engineering, and I know we're running a little behind time. This is usually like a 45-minute talk. I'm going to try to cram it in as quickly as I can, maybe have some time for questions. I think remote engineering is a really important thing. I know it's a thing that we've kind of talked about before. We spoke about it at SREcon last year. It's something that I think is very involved. It's going to play a big part in the future of how we do our work. So I'm going to give you a little background on who I am, and then we'll figure out how we can do this successfully. Hi, I'm Aveline. I work from home. I've been doing this since about mid-2009. I'm currently a staff operations engineer at Etsy. I joined Etsy in 2010. I like cats and I like telling stories, so this is going to be a story of what we're doing. I'm here because over the last 10 years, the industry has changed very, very significantly in the way that we approach work with some of the things that Todd was talking about earlier with cloud infrastructures and things. People have really started to embrace hiring more remote engineers, but it's not happening universally. It's happening in pockets around the industry. You see startups doing it. You see certain types of companies doing it. You don't see, for example, large banks doing it. And I think it can be something that we do everywhere. People also don't like moving. Like, one of the hardest things I have when I'm trying to hire people is trying to convince them, hey, our office is in New York. Do you want to move to New York? It's really great. You'll love it. Or, hey, we're hiring in Dublin. It's really nice. There's lots of Guinness. And like the selling points are actually kind of small when somebody has a family and they have kids or they're very established where they are and they don't want to move. So hiring in technical hubs like San Francisco, New York, London, Dublin, and Singapore, other places that we have, it's getting more and more difficult over time. The talent exists everywhere. But at the same time, having working as a remote engineer, there are challenges that we don't face as local engineers when we're working in the same building. So we're going to go over some of those today. So the first step, I think, is really thinking about how we can make our culture work happily. How many people here are remote engineers? If you work remotely right now. Whoa, that's probably about a fifth of the room. That's better than I've seen in most other places. And everyone who kept their hands up, like, this is easy, right? You just go, you just work at home, and like, nothing's different, right? No, it's terrible. It's horrible. And there's so much you have to figure out. And unless you have somebody teaching you how to do it, like, you stumble. I stumbled. The first time I tried to work from home, it took me like 6 months to figure out all of these things that I'm speaking about today. And I had nobody teaching me how to do it. So today's story is about Ether. This is Ether. He's a beautiful cat. And he's going to be our remote engineer and going to show us what it's like to work from home. This is the beach. Who's worked from the beach before? It's horrible. You cannot see anything on the screen. There's sand on your laptop. It's the worst thing you can do. But when I tell people, hey, you can work from home, one of the first things I hear is, oh, wow, I can go to the park. I can go to the beach. I can just do anything I want, right? Wrong. So this, like I said, there's new challenges when it comes to remote engineering. And this is sort of like the way I break it down. When somebody comes to me and says, hey, I want to be a remote engineer, I'm like, here's some things that you need to think about, right? There's communication and collaboration, hiring accountability, social pressures, work environments. All these things are going to come up, and you need to figure out solutions to them that are suited to your culture. So your life as a remote engineer, if you're not a remote engineer, kind of falls into three things that you need to think about on a daily basis. There's communication, discipline, and balance. And outside this, there's too much. Everything kind of stems from these things. So the first thing with communication, we're going to play a little game. And John Oswald's in the back, and he's going to recognize this game. So I need some volunteers. I need maybe about 10 volunteers. Matt Simmons put his hands up, so he's coming up. Carolyn, you can come up. Just go. Come on, guys. Come on. Everyone, I need people. Come up. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I need 4 more people. 4 more people. Any 4 people. Come on, got one over there. Yes, come on. Come on down. Okay. So this is a little game that we play at Etsy. John makes us do it about once a year. And it's to kind of illustrate our communication skills. And I'm going to just pull out my phone very quickly because we're going to need a timer for this. And the rules of the game are really simple. So I'm going to start a sentence with a word. I'm going to say a word. And we're going to go down the line and we're going to make up the sentence. You guys have probably seen something like this before. Real easy, but we're going to have some fun doing it. Got it. Okay. All right. So let's start over here. Timer. Ready? Okay. There.
Have. A.
Cut.
From.
No.
Sir. Sorry, I didn't hear that. What did you say?
There was a cat from.
Dublin. Eating.
Fish.
Sticks. loudly.
There was a cat from Dublin eating fish sticks loudly. So that took 28 seconds. I'm playing this game because one of the things that you do when you're working remotely is, sorry, we're going to do this one more time, so just stay there for a sec. We do this, when we're working remotely, a lot of our communications happens over mediums other than face-to-face communication. So you have textual communications, you may be talking on the phone, and it's important to learn how people on your team talk to each other, what they say, drop microphones, and how they communicate. So we're going to do this one more time, and we're going to do it again because that took 28 seconds. It took 28 seconds to get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 11 people to come up with one sentence. So we're going to try this again, and we're going to see if we can get it down to less than 28 seconds. Okay? Ready? Clear.
This. Was.
Clear, this was A.
Cloud.
Insufficient.
What? And.
Explosive.
I don't even know what was said so far.
Nor do I. Okay, yeah. We'll stop there. I want to thank you guys for being volunteers. You guys can go sit down. Thank you. It is really, really difficult. Like, when you're trying to come up with these things, when you're trying to improvise and communicate with each other like this, it's difficult. And we have this problem. What has happened to my slides? Anybody in the back? They say one moment. All right, we'll wait a moment. Improvise. So, clear, there was a cat. No. So the reason I was going through that is because when you're when you're trying to communicate with people who are maybe across many time zones on other sides of the world, maybe they speak different languages, these communications issues come up. And just as we're going down the line here, you need to be able to work together. And as you develop relationships with people, this gets better. This communication gets better, and it gets a lot easier to do. Still no slides? I'm almost there. Keep going. Hey, okay. Skip. Okay, so we played a game. And I was saying it's difficult, and you have to do these things to improve your communication. One of the ways that we do it at Etsy is we bring people together a lot. We come together, we travel, and we communicate very, very heavily. And these communications between people get better as a result. They start off like this. They start off very difficult, and people having a hard time understanding what the other person's saying, what they're feeling, because you're looking at a screen maybe, and you're in Slack or in HipChat or in RSC or something, and you may not get what the other person's saying, but over time, you do these things to improve communications between people. We like to communicate as remote by default, and this is, I think, something that we as an industry need to push for. It doesn't just help us on our teams. It helps us when we're communicating with other organizations as well. Who here hangs out on Freenode? Yeah, that's a good number of people. Okay, so this is like one of the things I'm talking about. When I say communicate by remote as default, I mean assume that whoever you're talking to may not be at the next desk, they may not be in the next office, they're just somewhere out there. And it makes it a lot easier when you take this and always assume that whoever you're talking to is remote, they're somewhere else, and it helps improve your communications over time. This is just a quick snippet of a conversation that two people at Etsy were having about a service that failed. And you can see from the timestamps, it took about 10 minutes to get the problem solved. If they were sitting next to each other, it may have happened in like a minute. It may have happened in 2 minutes. It took 10 minutes, which is a long time. And this is one of the things that we're struggling with, I think, as an industry, is like trying to prove that if you have remote engineers, you can still do things fast. You can still do things efficiently. And what we had here was just an example, even though it took 10 minutes, of things coming and working out very well. The thing that when I show people this, they say, oh, yeah, well, it took 10 minutes. That's a long time when something could have been, you know, if these two people were sitting next to each other, they could have solved it in, like, 2 minutes. I'm like, yeah, that's true. But in that 10 minutes, they actually had a pretty detailed conversation about all the things that needed fixing, not just the one thing that was immediately in front of them. And they got all of these things resolved. It's very important to have one-on-ones with your manager. Everyone have one-on-ones with their manager? Who has more than one one-on-one with their manager a week? 3 people! What? I have at least 2 to 3 one-on-ones with my manager a week, and each of them lasts at least 30 minutes. This sounds like a lot. It sounds like I'm, you know, spending a lot of time in meetings. I swear I hate meetings. I don't like them anymore. But as a remote engineer, the only way I know what's going on in the office, that's going on with other people, with my peers, is to have somebody act as that medium that I can communicate through. So I talk to my manager. Oftentimes, he calls me on his way home. He works in New York. He lives in New Jersey. He has like an hour drive. He calls me like twice a week, and like once during the week we have something during the day, and it makes a huge difference. Have many, many one-on-ones with your manager. The next thing on that list was discipline. Very important. When I started off as a remote engineer, this is what my schedule was like, and it was a mess. It was horrible. Like I said, it took me 6 months to figure this stuff out. This is how I started out, and I have to call some attention to this. Not just because I started out this way, but I'm coming off the end of some pretty serious burnout. I spent about 18 months way too deep in some work that I should have worked with my team on more collaboratively. This makes me a bit of a hypocrite being up here talking about this. But I've started falling back into this. And because we have such a large group of people at Etsy who are remote, other people saw me doing this and helped me pull out of it. And it's something that you have to keep working on. It's not something like once you figure out how to have a good schedule, like that's it. You know, you don't wake up like this guy, and he's like, yep, I'm not coming into work today. I'm working from Box today. And, you know, what you do is you schedule like this. And this is a schedule that my manager and I have been working on for a couple of weeks now. Looks really busy, pretty colors. But it's taken us a few weeks to work out that this is actually something that works for me. You see the bright orange blocks there? I've actually dedicated some time to doing technical work. We all like doing technical work, but we often need like a block of time. You don't get to do solid technical work in like 5 minutes here or like 15 minutes there. You actually need to be able to sit down and do it, right? So actually having like specific time in the week scheduled and blocked out for that is important. But as a remote engineer, like I said, one of the ways that I communicate with the rest of my team is through my manager. You know, we have all these one-on-ones, but I also now have one-on-ones with like 5 or 6 people on the team. Every week, I have like 30 minutes. I just sit down, we get on a video conference thing, and say, hey, how's it going? You know, let's just talk about stuff. What are you working on? What am I working on? How's the family? We don't necessarily talk about, you know, all the big projects that someone's involved in. Just having like a little social time together makes a huge difference. And it really, one of the things it does is really bring like the social bonds together and really help people get together and collaborate and know each other and understand each other. This is part of discipline. It's not my desk, but it's, again, something, you know, found on Flickr. My desk used to look something like this, and every now and then it does. I spend about 15, 20 minutes at the end of every day just tidying up my desk, making sure everything's in order. It goes towards, like, just having a really good, solid work environment. Again, you don't want to go back to, you know, that schedule if I go back, you know, this. You wake up in the morning, you go down to your desk, and you're like, it's kind of messy, I guess. I guess I can do some work, but you just don't feel like it. It's not a good, healthy work environment. So having an actual proper desk tidied up and stuff, these are just little things, right? I'm not talking about anything crazy or drastic here, but these are the things that are involved in being a good, solid remote engineer. Don't be a black box. As somebody, when you're working remote, it's real easy to just like shut everything out, to ignore everything, you know, ignore your team's, you know, whatever communication methods you use, whether it's RSC or Skype or whatever, and just say, you know, I'm just going to go work on this one thing over here, and I'm just going to ignore what everybody else is doing. And it's a horrible trap to fall into, but it's such an easy one. I've done it. Anyone else? Come on, somebody must have done it. Yeah, there's some people who have done it. And it sucks, right? Because then you lose, you don't have that communication with your team. You're not talking to them. You're not finding out what's going on. And you don't really get a lot of that collaboration. The knock-on effect from that is when big projects come up, cool things come up, you're not the first person that people think about saying, hey, he could really lead this. He's really great. Okay, so that, you know, she's remote. Who cares? Like, that's not the thought that people have. People think, oh, that person's remote. They're not any good at leading projects because they don't communicate with people. They don't talk to other people. So be visible. Be a communicator. Last thing on this, just don't accept work silently. It's very easy to just say, hey, you know, no one's going to see, you know, what I'm doing. I've got lots of time. I can fix things. I can do a lot of work. I'll just work into the evening, whatever. I'm just sitting at my desk at home, not doing anything else. I'll just keep accepting lots and lots of work. It sets a bad precedent. And it's, again, it's another easy trap to fall into. Traveling is super duper important. At Etsy, I travel to New York about once a month. I live in Michigan, so it's a pretty short trip for me. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hours on the plane. We have other people who live in Europe, people live on the other side of the US. They come over about once a quarter. Traveling is very critical, and we'll get into more about this. And there's probably some managers in the audience. I want to talk to you guys about travel as well. But do travel. If you're going to work remotely, it's not something you can really do and pull off very well if you never, ever get FaceTime with the people you're working with. Having balance, again, going back to sort of the discipline thing as well, having set start and end times of your day helps a lot. I took my first vacation last October. It's my first real vacation. I've taken time off to do other things. But last October was my first real vacation in about 4 years, and it was way too long to wait. Everybody here, I'm sure, I hope, gets some kind of paid leave. Take it. Don't lose it. Don't let it just burn out at the end of the year. Take that time, recuperate, because it helps a lot. And get a hobby. This is my hobby. I like to take photographs. I took this one about 2 months ago in a little park outside Michigan. But getting out and detaching yourself from work. If you do have the opportunity to work from home, Don't be like, all right, well, my home is my office. Everything I do at home is work. You have to be able to step out and keep the two, the work side and the home side, kind of separated a bit. All right, so that was just the easy stuff. Now there's a whole bunch of stuff that nobody tells you about working remotely. First of all, you are your own tech support, right? This is kind of an obvious one. If things break, you have to fix it. The only thing I've had that our corporate help desk, corporate IT folks have been able to help with recently is, hey, my external hard drive's broken. Can you guys send me another one when you get a chance so I can keep backing up my stuff? Like, that's as far as it goes. Keyboard breaks, you got to go get a new one. Monitor breaks, well, they might be able to ship you one, but if you need one soon, you got to deal with it. All these things you have to deal with by yourself. You got to get really good at your own systems administration. Conflict resolution is a really, really big one for me. We did a class on conflict resolution at Etsy probably about 2 years ago, I think now. And when we were doing it, no, I got to be honest, it was one of those things. Somebody came in and was teaching the class and saying, hey, we're going to do this thing on conflict resolution. My first thought was, oh my God, this person's a hippie. But at the end of it, like, I was completely blown away. Like, this thing about conflict, that it turns out successful companies, all the companies you see out there that become wildly successful, they have employees that are really, really good at conflict resolution. And conflict resolution doesn't just mean like, hey, oh my God, I'm gonna punch that person in the face if he says one more thing. It just means like knowing when somebody's about to say something to you that might upset you, realizing that it's about to happen, knowing how to deal with it, and being able to communicate back and say, hey, this thing you're doing, it's not cool. Like, we need to figure out a solution to this. You keep aggravating me, or you keep doing things that I find upsetting. And again, the other side too, like, being able to accept when somebody comes to you and says, hey, you're doing stuff that I don't think is right. Like, let's figure out how we can have a resolution to this. And it can be simple stuff, like, you know, you keep giving people access to the servers. Why are you doing it? Like, do you not open tickets before you do it? Can we discuss it? Real simple, basic stuff, all the way up to serious personal, interpersonal communication problems. So conflict resolution is really important. If you ever have the opportunity to take like a little course on it, a little class on just being able to discuss and go through these things, yes, it is a little bit touchy-feely, but it makes a huge difference. When you're talking to somebody who may be 3 hours away, time zone-wise, or maybe 8 hours away or further, and your communication is only over, you know, IRC or something, and they're saying things or doing things, and you don't necessarily agree with it, having the tools to be able to approach them and talk to them about things can make a really big difference. Who's this? This was the Journal of Education for Business. They actually did a little survey. They found that in organizations where people haven't gone through like sort of a good conflict resolution thing, a manager can spend up to 25% of their time just resolving issues between employees. That's a lot of time for managers. They could be doing some more useful stuff like going to meetings or something. I don't know whatever managers do. There is stuff that managers need to do. First, get your employees a cat. They're really cool. The next thing is, you know, like I said, the one-on-ones I have like 2 to 3 of them a week, really need to over-communicate. You really need to, you're kind of the focal point that employees come to if you have a remote engineer. You're the person that they depend on to really stay integrated with whatever's happening in the office, whatever people are talking about. Encourage this kind of remote by default attitude. Makes a big difference, not just like to remote engineers, but let's say you have everybody in your team in the office. Great, that's wonderful. Let's say a few people want to work from home one day a week. If you don't have this attitude of work remote by default, it can even make something like as simple as that really, really challenging, because everybody will be in the office just chatting and talking, and the people who are working from home be like, ah, I'm just kind of left here. I don't got nothing to do. So encourage remote by default and setting good availability expectations. Like, it goes back to that calendaring, goes back to that scheduling. I like this idea of kind of core hours. It's something that I've done before that's worked pretty well. Expecting that someone's always going to be available, even if they're remote, between a certain set of hours can help other people who are looking for them, like, understand, yeah, this person's going to be around between, like, 11 and 4, 11 and 5, whatever it is. Like, I know that they'll be there during that time. Outside that time, I won't worry about it. Click. Managers, you guys also influence the business a lot. When you're putting forward your hiring expectations, you always want to be looking for people who are good at communicating, people who are good at taking tasks and running with them. It's especially important when you're hiring remote engineers. The travel thing I mentioned, if you don't have budget for travel, for letting your remote employees come to the office at least 4 or 5 times a year, you really want to think about whether hiring remote engineers is the right thing. Like, this is such a key part. Getting that FaceTime, getting that time to build relationships between people is so important and so vital that, you know, I don't think it can be compromised. So find that budget, like, encourage people to travel. We have something, another thing we use at Etsy called doubles development. It's you know, just an extension of Agile almost. And where we find people in different groups and find a bug that one of them may know something about and the other one, you know, may want to learn about, and pair them up. And this works fantastically if you're a remote employee. I was solving a bug a few months ago where, so if you go on Etsy, you know, you see listings, things people can come and buy. And as part of our data set, we store when some of this information was updated about user accounts and so on. And one of the bits of information we have is, like, when did this user join Etsy? And some people reported back and said, hey, my join date is you know, it's wrong. Like, it's off by a couple of years. And this wasn't happening very much, but, like, a really, really tiny percentage of people were like, yeah, it says I joined, like, last week. I really joined, like, 2 years ago. Like, what is going on? So I got paired with another developer, and I know databases, so I dug into the database, looked at the ORM code, trying to figure out where this was going on, and paired up with a real developer who actually was able to look through the code. And together, over the course of about 6 or 8 hours, we were able to find this one very, very rare edge case that kind of exhibited this problem. And now I have a friend that I didn't have before. So it's really cool to just be able to like sit together, even if you're remote, you know, just get together on video conferencing and get to know people. Find out how your engineers are feeling. This is a really hard one, right? Like I know a lot of people don't like talking about their feelings. Like when you're talking to your manager, you just want to talk about the work that you have to do and the projects that you're doing. But you need someone to talk to, right? It's going to be your manager or the cat. So find somebody and like managers, like encourage your employees, like see if this is appropriate, if this is something that, you know, that people feel comfortable talking to you about, go for it. Talk about it. It really helps. And if your employee is remote, as I am, you know, I have a family, I've got a wife, I've got kids, you have to understand that working remotely doesn't just impact your team, your company, and that one employee, it affects their entire family. And it's really, really hard, and sometimes it can get very stressful. My wife and I had like a disagreement a while ago because of the way I was working. And she said, you know, when you're working, you're just kind of sitting there and just typing and you're doing stuff. And like, I get that, but you're not really working, right? Like, that's just sitting there at your computer, right? You know, like, you could be looking at Facebook or you could be doing something. You're just sitting there working. I'm like, no, I'm really working. This is what I do. This is my job. Like, you've seen me do this for like 9 years now. What? And she's like, oh, so we kind of worked through this. I used some of those conflict resolution things that I learned before. And I said, hey, okay, let's work through this. Where is this issue coming in? It turns out that when the rest of my family is using their computers, they're on Facebook. They're playing games. They're playing World of Warcraft. They're on, you know, they're talking to their friends. And when they see me at my desk working at home, they think, oh, that's, you know, it's the same thing. He's just kind of sitting there. He's not actually working because that's what we see. So being able to relate to families and talk to them and say, hey, you know, it's not just about you, my wonderful employee. Like, this is going to impact your family, and this is how, and we need to make sure everything's good. You need to understand that, too. I don't think I can explain how important a good AV solution is. Like if you've never worked with like a really bad video conferencing solution, I'm really happy for you. Like, but it's so bad. Like if you've ever tried to have a meeting with like 10 people all crowded around one little laptop and somebody's got like Skype running on it and so that you can hear when you're like 3,000 miles away. It's one of the worst things that you can do. It destroys communications. You just sit there as your remote employee and you're just like, I've got a, nope, never mind. I don't have a question. You guys keep talking. Oh, wait, no, I do have a question. And like nobody's listening to you. So having a solid, like really good video conferencing solution costs money, but it pays off dividends. Like it's really amazing. As part of meetings, if you're in a meeting with remote engineers, this doesn't just apply to managers, this applies to anyone. Like if you're in a meeting and you have remote engineers dialed in, just you be an advocate for them. If you see somebody who's trying to speak up or like maybe has their hand up, when this, you know, take a moment to say, hey guys, you know, this person up here really wants to say something. They've had their hand up for a moment. It can be hard to interject sometimes when you're remote and everybody in like a conference room is all huddled around talking. So just be aware of little things like that. Having a moderator is really key too. I've got like a minute 38, so I'm gonna kind of rush through this. Don't just have one remote engineer. Like a team with one remote engineer is just like some guy or girl out there doing stuff. Have like a bunch of remote engineers on a team. Cabin fever is a real thing. Get outside. Don't just sit inside all day every day doing stuff. This is Ari Panir put something up. You know, he was working on. He just decided, hey, I'm gonna go work out in the garden. Okay, it's not the beach. You won't get sand on your laptop, but you know, he's got some nice shade out there, so he can see his laptop and just get out for a little bit. There are some benefits, other benefits to remote engineering, which we already kind of talked about. There is a catch-22, and this is an important thing I want to touch on in my last sort of minute. It's hard to get a remote engineering job when you don't have experience as a remote engineer. This is the thing I hear over and over and over again. So there's two options that you really have. The first is to find a company who's willing to take a chance on you. Usually there might be smaller companies, but there's a lot of bigger companies who, if they have an established remote engineering workforce, like they have the tools already to make it work, might be good. Or try and convert your existing position to a remote position. Talk to your manager, talk to HR, see if that's something that's viable. And I got 25 seconds left. Anyone have any questions? One over there. Do I have the remote? Oh, yes. I get to throw it. See if I can do this. All right. Oh, almost.
One of the things that I found as a remote engineer that's the most difficult is communication across time zones. Say, for example, if you work in Europe and you have colleagues who work on the west coast of the US, you never see them, you never hear them unless you travel, and your day ends when theirs begins. How do you think that's the best way to solve that problem is, other than working late into the night?
Yeah, I don't advocate anyone working late into the night. Having done it, like, this is the reason I'm coming off my burnout right now, is because I spent like a year working really, really late into the night. So if you have to communicate with people over large time zones, I've seen there's two practical things that work. First is have as much overlap as you can. Like, see if the person who's on the West Coast is willing to wake up a little earlier, see if the person who's on, you know, working in Europe is willing to stay a little later. Not much, just an hour, 2 hours, just to have that communication. And at that point, just that's where the travel really comes in and is important, because you're trying to establish not just the ability to communicate with each other, but a social relationship. Like, if you're 8 hours away from me, that's cool as long as I know, like, how you work, how you talk, how you communicate, and how I can hand things off to you. Like, it makes all of those little things much, much easier. So it really comes down to, like, have as much overlap as you can, and then travel and just get FaceTime together. I think I may have time for one. Can I get one more question? No? No?
Very fast.
Anyone have a fast question? Nope, good, that's it. I'll come talk to you in a moment. All right, thank you very much.